From cotton gins and grain elevators to factories and skyscrapers and grasslands to forests, there's only one host and one show covering it all. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
From the True Texan Studio, I'm Robert Pratt, and this is Pratt on Texas. Subscribe free to all our shows, interviews, and more at PrattOnTexas.com. No charge right now. You can share, please share the links as much as you can. That's what we need to do to, make the online version work. Coming up on Pratt on Texas, are Texas legislators using COVID as a way to ignore an excuse to ignore bills outside their pet projects? We look at the current working rate compared to past legislative sessions. The Second Amendment is under serious threat, and it's created a shortage of firearms and ammunition. LSG's Steve Burns comments tells us what it means to you as a customer. Oil and gas rig count continues to grow in Texas, slowly, but it's growing. And will hearings on the Great Freeze result in much other than blame spreading? I don't like him, but State Rep. Charlie Guerin's right when he echoes me pointing out that, these issues have been before the legislature, or these ERCOT issues, several times before. They just haven't acted on most of it. That and other news of Texas all ahead on Pratt on Texas. By the way, today in 1963, the American Football League franchise Dallas Texans' name was changed to the Chiefs, and Lamar Hunt of Dallas agreed to move the city to the team to Kansas City, and the rest is history with our good Texas boy out there, Mahomes, as the quarterback. There you go, and having won the Super Bowl last year. All right, my friends. CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, is meeting in Florida. By the way, they're talking about maybe permanently moving it to Florida, which is probably good, and sure don't need to go to the D.C. area. Senator Cruz gave a pretty good joke up there in his speech this morning. Florida Governor DeSantis, who just from the beginning has impressed me. Ron DeSantis is like us. He's a real conservative. He spent his formative years listening to Limbaugh almost every day. He really understands it. And he's the governor there, and he got to do the kickoff speech. And I love what he said. He slammed the, quote, failed Republican establishment of yesteryear. That is a meaning-packed phrase. The failed Republican establishment of yesteryear. Now, Florida's leading on the issues that matter to conservatives. We don't spout hollow rhetoric. We take decisive action, Governor DeSantis said. He is so impressive. He's so impressive that it's getting to the point where I might jump on his bandwagon in a presidential run primary immediately, even over people that I really like Ted Cruz. Words mean are one thing, but action's another. DeSantis has just proven himself time and again. Anyway, love Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz got a prime spot today as the convention went on, and he began with this thing about Cancun because, how terrible he went to bed. Took the kids down to Cancun during the Great Freeze, as if he has a damn thing to do with anything to do with getting the power back on. Oh, but he opened, he said, I got to say, Orlando is awesome. It's not as nice as Cancun, but it's nice. He gave a pretty rousing speech about the Bill of Rights and cancel culture. Urged everybody to speak out for freedom. The left believes in a rigid conformity. We believe in diversity. This is true, by the way. This has always been true, despite the ignorance of those who fall for that diversity line from the left. Cruz said, you can say whatever you want, no matter how dumb it is. By the way, in Washington, D.C., we test that proposition. Yeah, every day. Every day. And by the way, out of the legislature, the public education committee chairman, which is a Democrat. I don't know why the speaker put a Democrat there, probably because schools weren't going to get any more money this time. Harold Dutton of Houston, been there a long time. He is the House public ed chairman, and he told people that some of the funding for some schools will probably shrink in the spring. It's the hold harmless money. The state will, Reform Austin said, reported it this way, the state will have hold harmless funding for school districts this spring semester with many incentives to find lost students. He did, Dutton, however, give the caveat, the warning, that the magnitude will likely be smaller than the hold harmless before. So basically there, the schools, they don't get out and get these kids back in school. They can expect that they're not going to get nearly as much money from the House public ed chairman. talking about the great freeze, which is, you know, the only thing they are talking about right now in Austin in the legislature, our great friend Merrill Matthews at Institute for Policy Innovation, IPI.org, had a great piece. Note to media, not all cold temperatures are due to climate change. He wrote, nearly every weather-related national media report I've read or heard over the past week stressed one key point. The recent cold weather that froze Texas is just one more example of extreme weather events caused by climate change. The only problem with that narrative is it's wrong. If that narrative were true, it would mean that severe cold snaps are new to Texas. They aren't, to be sure. The extremely cold weather that blanketed the Lone Star State beginning Valentine's Day and lasting about 5 days was unusual, just not unprecedented. The official temperature in the Dallas-Fort Worth area dropped to -2 degrees Tuesday morning on February 16th, but according to the National Weather Service, DFW experienced -8 degrees, and wait for it, 1899. That was long before fossil fuel emissions from cars, airplanes, and electricity generation were putting large quantities of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. The National Weather Service goes on to say, the lowest temperature ever recorded in the state occurred in Tulia in Swisher County in the extreme southern Texas panhandle. The thermometer dropped to 23 degrees below zero. However, there were unofficial reports that were even colder. Low temperatures of 30 degrees below zero were measured that night at Wolf Creek and at a site southeast of Perryton, both in Ochiltree County in the northern panhandle. This cold air spread throughout the state with reports of a thin layer of ice coating most of Galveston Bay. That coldest year? Well, no, that other was 1899. This was 1933. The National Weather Service helpfully lists the coldest recorded nights in 17 of Texas' largest cities. Of those 17 record lows, only four have occurred since 1950. Here are the 10 of the coldest nights. Abilene, -9 in 1947. Amarillo, -16 in 1899. Austin, -2 in 1949. Dallas-Fort Worth, -8 in 1899. El Paso, -8 in 1962. Houston, the lowest there, 5 degrees, 1930 and again in 1940. Lubbock, -17 in Lubbock in 1933. Midland-Odessa, -11 in 1985. San Antonio, 0 degrees in 1949. And Wichita Falls, -12 degrees in 1947. Merrill points out, cold weather's been invading Texas long before the media became obsessed with climate change. The Earth has been on a gradual warming trend since the last ice age, which is why we aren't in an ice age anymore. And humans may very well be exacerbating that warming trend. But severely cold weather happens in Texas. It isn't common, but it does happen. And long before news reports and the left blamed everything that occurs on climate change. Way to go, Merrill Matthews. You know, learn your history. Learn about why the area in which I live was so forbidding. All these false springs, so many people on horseback, they'd have to carry all their feed and a lot of water with them. They'd get out here thinking that it'd been a month of beautiful weather, and all of a sudden they'd be covered in ice and the animals would die, and they would die in late spring or early spring. We've always had severe weather and differences and extremes. By the way, the entire plains of North America, the Great Plains, I sit near the southern tip of that, runs all the way up into Canada, because it is the central plain of the continent, is always a seesaw of extreme weather. That's just how it works. Well, my friends, they're talking all about this big freeze in Austin. President Biden's come to Texas today, so we've been further polluted. The AP wrote nothing but a puff piece, as you would expect. Biden to exercise empathy skills in Texas visit. President Joe Biden will exercise his empathy skills Friday during a Texas visit with a dual mission, surveying damage caused by severe winter weather and encouraging people to get their coronavirus shot. Biden and his wife, Jill, were traveling to Houston for the president's first trip to a major disaster site since he took office. And he's going to meet with local leaders. Governor Abbott's going to accompany him. The propagandist at the AP ended the story about Biden with, coincidentally, Houston was the first destination for Trump's presidential visit in the disaster in 2017 after Hurricane Harvey. Trump, who is not known for displays of empathy, did not meet with storm victims on the visit. They had to run a Trump hit in this piece about Biden coming to Houston. It just doesn't surprise. Back in a moment.
Pratt returns after the break.
Founded by local resident Chase Powell, Lubbock Web Guys have been providing custom websites and digital marketing solutions for the West Texas community for over 15 years, specializing in custom websites, Google My Business optimization, search engine optimization, pay-per-click campaigns, and content creation. They build websites that build local business. If you want to have your website hosted by a professional that's not some big leftist corporation, you've got an option in the Lubbock area, LubbockWebGuy.com. LubbockWebGuy.com.
You've never been one to look back or tolerate excuses, and you won't start now. A new year is dawning, a fresh start, and together we'll do what only Texas can, lead the way for the world. So here's to the entrepreneurs and to 2021, the year of the comeback. Vista Bank, entrepreneurs banking entrepreneurs since 1912.
You know I love my Green Mountain Grills pellet smoker, and many of my listeners do too. They write and call to tell us. One thing to remember about the family-owned Green Mountain Grills crew, they don't stand still. They hustle to make improvements and upgrades. For example, many of the great upgrades in the Prime lineup came from customers, both backyard smoking kings to award-winning pitmasters from coast to coast. See the ever-improving lineup of Green Mountain Grills along with quality made-to-fit accessories at greenmountaingrills.com. Find your local dealer at greenmountaingrills.com, too. Your local dealer can get you the quality accessories you need, like the very popular custom pizza oven that integrates with your pellet smoker's firebox. Every owner should have a thermal blanket on their Green Mountain Grill and a proper grill cover made to fit perfectly to protect your pellet smoker from the elements. See the ever-improving lineup of Green Mountain Grills along with quality made-to-fit accessories at greenmountaingrills.com. Smell the smoke.
We're back with more Pratt on Texas. Join the Pratt on Texas Listener Club at prattontexas.com. Just like the show, it's free. Now, here's Pratt.
Well, it's no surprise the plaintiff's bar has already got itself deeply into the great freeze. There was a piece today in the at ntd.com. Texas power retailer hit with $1 billion class action suit claiming price gouging. And then you get the typical story. Lisa Corey of Chambers County claims she was charged with an excessive electricity bill during a deadly winter storm that knocked many power supply facilities offline, according to a petition filed with the Harris County District Court. Attorneys representing Corey said in the suit the utility customer's bill for the period of February 1 through 19 spiked to a total of $9,546. Her monthly bill normally averages between $200 and $250, and she keeps a $150 balance in her account to pay the bills. Corey said she tried to reach the company repeatedly after the retailer automatically withdrew eight times the amount of $150 from her bank account between the period of February 13th and 18th, totaling $1,200. Gritty, the firm involved, never answered her concerns. The plaintiffs claim she eventually blocked her bank account on February 18th to prevent further charges, but she still owes the utility now thousands of dollars. And they say Gritty charged Corey in the middle of a disaster. Well, that's how it worked. I think those plans, you get deducted weekly or something. But anyway, this company was launched in 2017. They just charged $10 a month, and then on top of that, you get the wholesale price of electricity. And they came out of California. They work there. They've been working in Texas. Who knows whether they'll survive this? Look, I'm not saying, and the politicians are working on this, and I guess under maybe the price gouging complaint, you might could say something. I don't know. The fact is, this is what the price went up to. And as I said earlier, people chose plans that were the cheapest plan. The more risk the vendor absorbs, the higher the price for you. The more risk you absorb, the lower the price for you. People chose these plans. Now, well, they didn't know it could go so high. Well, that's their own fault. Sorry. I'm not saying people are going to be able to pay $9,000 or $17,000 electric bills. I think all this is going to work out in the mess, but the fact is, these companies have all had a loss. The generators didn't make money. They're going to turn up losing money. The only people who made money were gas futures people. The fact is, people signed up for this service, I guess, in a free market with a lot of choices. They went for the cheapest thing at the time without any regard to the fact that if you're paying the wholesale price, if wholesale prices spike, those are going to be passed on along to you. There has got to be a little bit of personal responsibility in this. Again, I realize some of these bills are so outrageous, but the electric companies lost money too. Most of these companies are going to go out of business. They got to pay whom they bought the power from. And those people are losing money because they had to pay massive amounts of money for delivery of gas and other fuel to produce the power. It's the way it works. In fact, Reuters had a winners and losers in energy sector from Texas cold snap. And it's interesting. The winners, gas producers. Comstock Resources said the last week was like hitting the jackpot, saying it was able to sell at super premium prices. EQT Corp said it benefited from the high prices. Australia's Macquarie Group, second biggest gas marketer in North America after BP, lifted its profit guidance Monday. Other natural gas-weighted production companies, including Cabot Oil and Gas, Southwestern Energy, Range Resources Corp, and Antero Resources may benefit from the freeze, according to Morgan Stanley. And then refiners, who had limited exposure to the Texas market, appeared to have done well. Losers. Okay, for everybody who says, well, they shouldn't bill me. They're evil. They made money off this. No, they didn't. The first loser Reuters list are the utilities. Just Energy on Monday raised doubt about its ability to continue on as a going concern after it forecast a $250 million loss from this storm. Energex Renewable Energy forecast a financial impact of up to, I think, $47.48 million on its Texas wind farms. Algonquin Power and Utilities said Friday it expects the potential hit to adjusted core earnings this year to between $45 million and $55 million. Atmos Energy said Friday it purchased natural gas for an extra $2.5 billion to $3.5 billion due to higher cost of the fuel, adding it was evaluating financing options to pay for additional purchase costs. Vistra Corp, when we spoke about yesterday, estimated a one-time adverse impact of between $900 million and $1.3 billion. Oilfield service companies on the list of losers, too. Shale oil producers on the list of losers in this, like Diamondback Energy, Cimarex, Occidental Petroleum, Laredo Petroleum. Laredo said its Permian Basin operations were affected for the last 12 days. And estimated the combined impact of shut-in production and completions delays hurt output tremendously. And then Gulf refiners. The refiners along the Gulf Coast had to shut down. So the whole bunch of product wasn't produced and delivered to fulfill contracts. So, you know, everybody wants to say, well, they made. No, you chose these variable rate plans. You assumed risk. That's why you get a lower price. And then when it went crazy, oh my gosh, they're just robbing me. And of course, most people think, oh, the electric company's making. No, the only reason it went up is because they had to pay that to somebody else. And that's just the way life works. And people need to get over it and understand it. Now, before I go on into more on the big freeze and the political stuff going on, let's get our rotary rig count done from Baker Hughes since I was talking about these folks in production. The Baker Hughes report out for February 26th says oil and gas rigs, the U.S. total went up by 5. So we see more growth this week. It went up to 402 in the U.S. And North America as a whole is 565. Texas rig count increased by 3 to 197. Now, recall this time a year ago, we were already in a slump, and yet we had 400 running. So we're still 203 down. But a week ago, we were at 194. We added 3 in Texas. That's 197. The Permian as a whole added 4 rotary oil and gas rigs this week. So that's your oil and gas rig count from Baker Hughes on a Friday when it comes out every week. Texas natural gas production fell by almost half during the storm. Well, those gas people, looks like they made all the money. Well, we ought to put them in jail. Well, wait a minute. Fuel Fix reporting natural gas production fell by almost half during last week's winter storm as power outages, bitter cold, and ice knocked out wells, processing facilities, and pipelines, according to the federal report. We're the largest gas-producing state. Production declined by about 45% to 11.8 billion cubic feet per day on February 17th, down from 21.3 per day during the week before the storm. So that pulled U.S. production down 21%. And the U.S. Department of Energy said the decline in output was a result of freeze-offs, which occur when water and other liquids freeze at the wellhead and gather in these gas lines and just freeze up. Although natural gas companies ramped up production ahead of the storm in anticipation of higher demand for heating and electricity, the lack of winterization and power outages to well sites, go back and listen to that testimony yesterday and go back to our show on February 18th, full week before when we told you this is what happened. It's interesting listening. This created caused a supply chain issue that, you know, it was basically a domino effect from the grid. The power outages and freezing temperatures kicked off a vicious cycle in which producers couldn't deliver enough gas to power plants, shutting down power plants and reducing further gas production. So, yeah, some people on the futures contract and some firms made out really well, which is why we have those kind of contracts. It's a way to mitigate risk across the economy. But they were hurt, too. I mean, that's, you may have got a lot from this side, but the other side lost a lot. So it all balances out. Now, big piece in the Austin American-Statesman. At Capitol hearings, blame for Texas outages is spread all around. And that's why I said at the top, I mean, is this just going to be just a way to spread the blame around? But I will tell you something. They had Senate, they got multiple hearings going on at one time, Senate and House. But I wanted to say, old Charlie Guerin, I've spent so much time talking about this, I just hate being repetitive. But I like this part. Some state lawmakers acknowledge that the legislature itself shouldered some responsibility. State Rep. Charlie Guerin of Fort Worth said, quote, some of the blame lies right here in this building. That's right, the Capitol, after the legislature failed to take stronger action in the wake of weather-related outages in February of 2011. I've told you this. For all the, oh, this is new, and all that, none of it's new. The two issues, the policy issue about the so-called renewables on the grid and the fact that they're not capacity. They don't, you can't turn them on and off. And the issue of a reserve margin in ERCOT are not new. They've been looked at many times.
Don't miss what Pratt says next. More Pratt on Texas after the break.
Pratt on Texas Listener Club member Tom from Wichita Falls wrote, I just returned from Costa Rica. I went there on your suggestion and cannot agree with you more. This was the best dental experience ever. I had a good bit of work done and Dr. Zuniga was able to get it all done in one day. The amount of care and attention was unbelievable. From the work itself and the follow-up to make sure everything was great before I went home made this a great experience. While root canals and crowns are not fun, this was the way to do it, Tom says. Thank you for recommending Dr. Zuniga in Costa Rica. I certainly will be referring friends and family. Friends, you can learn more about Dr. Sylvia Zuniga and Dento Care, my dentist, by the way, by clicking the banner at prattontexas.com. Go to prattontexas.com. You'll see the banner with Dr. Zuniga's beautiful picture. Click on it, and you can read all about it. Finally, having your teeth fixed and beautiful can be affordable and even fun.
Oh, birds do it, bees do it, all of God's creatures do it.
Do it.
That's a mighty good thing.
Yeah, that's a good
but
thing.
Bugs do it, termites do it, even while you sleep they do it.
Do it.
You know that's obscene. You gotta stop them before they multiply. Gafford Pest Control.
Pratt says, call Gafford Pest Control, 792-4292.
Visit RaiderRedMeats.com to see specials and promotions on the best tasting, best quality beef, pork, and lamb. Not only do we beef up with Raider Red Meats, Isabel and I love their sausage, especially that with the cheese and Hatch green chili in it, and their spicy barbecue sauce has become my favorite. Some Raider Red Meats products available in select United supermarkets. Ask at the meat counter. Raider Red Meats does sell the best tasting, best quality beef, pork, and lamb. Learn more at RaiderRedMeats.com or visit their Texas Tech campus store in Lubbock, where we shop.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's your Texan-in-Chief, Texas political swami. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Well, so how are legislators doing in Austin? The Capitol's darn near empty. I've had people who work around it and work in it and all that tell me it's just dreadfully slow. It's always slow early in the session, but they said this is unprecedented. Well, I've had an idea all along just from some things legislators have said that I've seen in local press around the state that a lot of them are going to use this COVID thing as a reason to drag their feet so they don't have to mess with legislation that they don't want to mess with. And that's sort of what they do when they pack it all in at the end and let the clock kill things. They can tell people back home, well, we just need more time. We need more time. But how does it stack up on the things you can measure? Well, it says they're way behind schedule. And Jeremy Kitchen at TexasScorecard.com wrote a piece on that. And so I called him up and said, let's talk about it. We're not very deep into the legislative session. It's the time that experience teaches me there's usually not a whole lot going on, especially if you go down there. But I was talking to a staff member. He said, man, it's slow. There's just not much happening at all yesterday when I was visiting personally with him. And Jeremy Kitchens with the Texas Scorecard, Jeremy wrote a piece sort of outlining that it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot going on. Why bills aren't moving. Jeremy, you're a legislative watcher. That's what you're doing. Just give us a rundown.
Sure. So, you know, to be upfront, right, we are still technically within the first 60 days, which both constitutionally and by rule in both House and Senate, they can't technically consider bills that aren't, you know, the governor's emergency items. But what they can be doing, right, is they are within the window in which they can start referring bills. And historically, along the same times of the 140-day session, the legislature has done so, right? They've referred bills to committees to kind of start the legislative process for bills. Sometimes having out of all the bills filed, 50, 60% of those bills have already been referred by now. And just today, as an update to my story, by the way, you know, the House just referred the first bills today. They referred about 475 of them. But even then, that only amounts to 20% of all of the bills that have currently been filed. And so, you know, technically, and of course, this is in the backdrop of course, COVID and the winter storm, and there's ongoing hearings right now in Austin with regard to that. But, you know, when compared to previous sessions, you can make the assertion that they are moving slower for whatever reason. And it's unclear as to what that reason is.
Jeremy, would this fit in with some of your just personal, you're guessing that they're taking advantage of, I was told basically by several different people in different ways, not explicitly. A lot of people were planning to actually take advantage of the COVID situation to move things more slowly this time around. Basically as a way to run out the, maybe for some good purposes, but you and I know that's all this clock stuff is used to run out the clock on things they don't want to do, which often turn out to be a lot of conservative priorities, and instead do just the things that are the members' big priorities. Is that a possibility? What do you see that makes that a right assumption or a bad assumption?
Sure. To your point, I think if history is any guide, we get to the end of every session. Conservatives especially get to the end of every session and they get told by their lawmaker, if only we had more time, right? And, it, you know, if you're a watcher, even if you're a layman to the legislature and you're just tuning in and you're looking, you know, on the House floor, I mean, I have numbers, too, that reflect just how many times, for instance, the House and Senate have convened and compared to previous sessions. And it's almost nominal. And so I think you have to draw the conclusion that they are using the excuse of COVID, for better or for worse, to not address some of those issues. If anything, to at least convey what their priorities are.
Right. And you know, look, I mean, I'm of the mind that when they're not meeting my liberties in better conditions. So, you know, sometimes sure. Not doing as much is good. And I had this person I was talking to yesterday talk about the big freeze and how, well, you know, the good thing was I couldn't get down there and do anything. I mean, it's bad when you have an agenda you're trying to move, but there is a certain amount of security in knowing that they're not meeting and doing things that are bad to you. And of course, then you have to interject into this, Jeremy Kitchens with the Texas Scorecard. You have to interject into this. That now everybody's politically grandstanding and preening over the debacle on the rolling blackouts and then the right. Further debacles locally because people chose not to have generator power for their water systems and things. Lubbock did where I live, but we're not on the ERCOT yet. We're on the Southwest Power Pool. We did have blackouts. We have full diesel generators at all the treatment stations and the pumping stations and all of that, which is a good disaster plan. But this is all of a sudden, everybody's figured this is the vulnerability to politicians. It's also the red meat for potential to be a real leader. And so the lieutenant governor goes out in the middle of we're in session, but finds time to barnstorm around the state, giving press conferences. The governor's doing it on television. That seems to all of a sudden be something they're going to push to the forefront and like today and have hearings on. I think most people would say, well, yeah, good, they need to, but at the exclusion of what else?
I think to your point, I think that is the concern by a lot of Texans, right? Obviously, even Texans that we just, you know, went through whatever it was last week, right? To different extents. And it's trying to, is this going to be used as an excuse to your point, right? To just political posture, to make it seem as a priority. And does that edge out other priorities, you know, especially conservative priorities, right? To your point, like as a conservative, like, yes, like anytime they're not in session, that's I'm securing my liberties. But for things that we may argue need to get done or rectified as conservative priorities, that's the concern is, are all of these things or the lack thereof edging out any would-be conservative priority getting through the entirety of the legislative process.
Given that the lieutenant governor came out once again with a really long list of priorities for the Senate, and that the Senate committee assignments, all these things have been fairly stable on the east end of the Capitol, why would we not be seeing referrals in the Senate? And by the way, folks, the Senate's where we've been moving most of our conservative legislation in the last many sessions. It dies in the House. Right. Why are they not referring more bills over on the east end of the Capitol?
That's definitely the unknown. I mean, I think we can certainly speculate. I would probably say a safe assumption is that the governor or the kind of the bully pulpit has a lot to do with that as far as, you know, posturing himself for whatever would be both running for reelection and anything thereafter. I think you've also got, you know, like so far to your point that the Senate has only referred really three bills, but two bills, one of them, the budget, because the budget is starting there, this biennium, but two, a blocker bill, which is a parliamentary procedure bill, right, which allows them to bring up other things on the intent calendar throughout the session. That's it. And they had committees established before the House did as well. And, you know, compared to previous sessions, just like the House, they are nowhere near comparable to previous sessions where they have started referring bills. And there is some unknown as to why that is. And I think the assumption, probably safe assumption you can make, is that maybe not the narrative had already been written, but there is a plan maybe to, you know, hide kind of behind the COVID stuff, the winter storm stuff and what have you, to kind of push out any would-be priorities past what's already planned for.
Well, I was the one that brought that up speculatively. I don't want you at the scorecard to get slapped with that, but I mean, I think that's all we can figure at this point, and it fits with things I've heard from legislators over the last 6 months or so, just their assumption that, hey, we're not going to be able to get as much done. Good piece at the scorecard where you actually take the TexasScorecard.com, where you take Sorry, it's TexasScorecard.com, folks. There's no day there. You can get there from PrattOnTexas.com, as you've been able to do since it existed. You got a chart comparing all these different legislative sessions. So if people want to go see that, take a look at it. It's Jeremy Kitchen with the Texas Scorecard. Jeremy, keep watching down there for us. We appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it, Robert. Have a good day.
One of the funniest things this week, if you could just step back, was watch the White House just flopping around like that floppy fish they sell you on TV for cats to play with over the fact that they're putting the kids back in the cages. And they got challenged at a press conference, and this Psaki, they've all, oh, we can't do it. And then later just, well, we're heartbroken, but we only have a couple of choices. You know, after beating the hell out of Trump over it, and yet it was Obama that built those cages, and those photographs of him in so-called cages were from the Obama era. They're letting she's making all these excuses. Oh, my God, it's all we can do. That has been funny to watch, because even some of the left is mad over that. United Nations agencies have begun efforts to return asylum seekers currently residing in Mexico under this great agreement Trump brokered with Mexico to hold them. They're bringing them back into U.S. soil for no reason other than, well, Trump made a deal. Mexico was keeping them for us. No. They're transporting 300 of them per day into the U.S. And we're seeing the same thing across the board. In other words, unravel all the good things Trump did and pull people in so that we create our own crisis. Think about it. That's what's been so funny to watch the White House all week on this kids in cages. They admit, well, their policies and stuff are really behind all this. They just don't have any other choice, but they beat the hell out of everybody else for doing the same when there's a crisis. It's you don't expect anything better out of the left. The number of illegal aliens crossing the border and pressing on us is going up. Number of apprehensions has gone up tremendously. And now we're going to take people that we actually got a foreign power to agree to hold till they wait till they get their asylum hearing, and we're starting to transfer them in here for no reason other than Trump did that agreement, so we've got to cancel it. It's just insanity. Back in a moment.
Pratt on Texas continues after this.
License TACLA 1229 OE. Stay warm this winter with Hart Heating and AC. Even with nice days, winter nights on the high ground of Texas are often extremely cold. Use your fine neighbors at Hart Heating and AC to keep your heating system operating at maximum efficiency and keep comfortable and warm. Keep comfortable and warm. Take it to Hart. Hart Heating and AC. H-A-R-T, heatingandac.com. Serving the Lubbock region. Take it to Hart. Today's Pratt on Texas podcast is sponsored by LubbockWebGuy.com. That's LubbockWebGuy, WebGuy.com. LubbockWebGuy.com. Founded by local resident Chase Powell, Lubbock Web Guy has been providing custom websites and digital marketing solutions for the West Texas community for over 15 years, specializing in custom websites, Google My Business optimization, search engine optimization, pay-per-click campaigns, and content creation. They build websites that build local business. Well, let me tell you how I came about, Chase. After the big prevaricators, just without any explanation still, by the way, canceled the time brokerage agreement I had with their company, my firm had with them, I've just been blown away how many of our sponsors and people, I haven't been calling people, but they all called me and said, oh, we canceled everything. And then people I don't even know. At least three different businesses that contacted me directly told me that they canceled their web hosting work that apparently Town Square Media, you know, they've spent more time worried about websites than they have their own and others than they have what's on the air for the last many years. Three different people said they canceled their hosting and web work with them. And one of our sponsors called me and said, hey, LubbockWebGuy.com, that they do ours and they do a good job. And he's already picked up some of your listeners. Well, I got in touch with Chase. I knew about his business. He's been around a long time. Don't know him well, but I know that he takes care of the business websites for quite a few folks in Lubbock and does a good job. And so I just want you to know, Chase Powell, if you want to have your website hosted by a professional that's not some big leftist corporation or, you know, dishonest company or whatever they are, you've got an option in the Lubbock area, LubbockWebGuy.com. Chase Powell, get in touch with him. Tell him Pratt sent you, LubbockWebGuy.com. Sponsoring today's Pratt on Texas podcast.
Pratt believes the best way to ensure limited government is to limit the number of libs and rhinos who get elected to office. Don't worry, he'll tell you who they are. Now, more Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Saw a big piece in the Abilene media today. This one, Brian Bethel at the Abilene Reporter News. City to bring options for, quote, self-generation, end quote, water system to Abilene City Council. And then you listen to City Manager Robert Hanna saying they might create a, quote, complete self-generation system that could run independently of any power system. Folks, be extremely afraid when you get consulting firms like they've hired and politicians starting to use this kind of language. We're talking about generators. All the hell they got to do is put in some big diesel generators like most people, like a lot of places have done. It's generators. It's not a complete self-generation system. That is code word for a whole bunch of extra stuff you probably don't need that just costs a lot. I'm just telling you, just warning you. It's a good idea. These are the basics of government. You know, they think conservatives never want government to do anything. Yes, we do. But it's the case of Abilene. Taking care of the streets has been a basic function of government for decades, but they don't do it. So what do they have to do, even though they don't have a super low property tax rate? They're right there with everybody else that's maintaining streets. So where's the money been going? They had to go get people to agree to a new tax on themselves just to maintain streets. This is another example of, well, where's the money been going? Conservatives are for things like this that involve basic services. We do it in our own homes and businesses. We have backup generation. We have system so that there's no single point of failure, all kinds of disaster recovery. Where's the money been going in these city governments when they haven't even handled this stuff? Most conservatives would agree with things like this. It's not that we're against everything. It's just our whole point is, you know, we want fire trucks that work, fire hydrants that work. We want policing. We want basic infrastructure taken care of. And we want all of that done so well that we don't want to even talk about all this ephemeral, all this wasteful stuff until after those things are done. But see, those things aren't exciting. And they don't appeal to special interest political pressure groups in town. So what happens is, well, you know what happens. They go for all that kind of stuff instead of taking care of the basics. And that's one of our big problems in local government and all government. Did you see the big report how once again new records were set for gun sales in the country? USA Today had a big piece out saying gun sales surged in January by 60%, setting an all-time monthly record of 4,137,480. The FBI tracks this number of sales since 98 with this the NICS, the background checks. They interviewed a bunch of folks in this story, and one guy in Oregon, Bend, Oregon, said, look, all the riots started it. Now it's the Democrats, and they're going to take our guns away, and people are purchasing now. Ammunition's in short supply now. I decided to call our original Second Amendment and anti-wimp headquarters and ask for Steve Burns' comment on all of this and how this attack on the Second Amendment and the shortage of firearms and ammunition will affect you in a practical manner. Here is that discussion. Visiting with Steve Burns of LSG Tactical Arms in Lubbock, the original Pratt on Texas Second Amendment and anti-wimp headquarters there on 34th Street between Boston and University. And there was a big USA Today piece out that everybody's picked up about record gun sales. Last year were record gun sales, then January, massive record gun sales across the country. They interviewed some folks. One guy says, look, the riots started it, but now it's the Dems telling us they're going to take our guns away, so people are purchasing. Now it's to the point ammunition is in short supply. Tell us about how that's affected you and your customers at LSG Tactical Arms, Steve.
Well, it has made it very difficult to get anything that is on your wish list. Right now, anything that goes bang is your friend, whether it be ammo or firearm. Right now, pretty much everything is at the point where it is rationed nationwide.
So the manufacturers are running double and triple shifts, but that doesn't matter. They have big contracts with suppliers and others, and so everybody's just getting a piece of the pie. What does that mean locally? It means you can't get a lot of, you just can't stock much or can't get what you're looking for? How does it work?
It's a little bit of both of those. Right now, everything pretty much is rationed in the supply line. So instead of just relying on, you know, just a couple of premium suppliers, now we are having to reach out and maybe make contact with 24, 30 different suppliers, sometimes just to complete enough of an order for a single customer.
Wow. And it's made it tough in that you just can't keep, there's just no inventory to be had.
No, not at all. Right now, everything is still flowing. However, it is at a much reduced quantity, just completely random in amounts and in time frames.
So you've got stuff to sell, but it's just hard to get it in. Is that so people can still expect to be able to order things or get them, but might be a while or what?
Sure, yeah. We still see a little bit of everything rolling through, but right now it is just completely random. It's almost like opening a Christmas package every day when when FedEx and UPS show up with our allotment for the day.
Well, that's a tough position to be in, to see record sales and realize that the actual local dealers, though, aren't really able to enjoy that windfall so much, because if you don't have it to sell it, you can't sell it. What are your thoughts about this, the Democrat move to push massive gun control? I mean, this looks really, really bad.
This is the most dangerous situation we've ever been in before. This is the most horrible attack that the Constitution, I think, has ever seen. And if they are successful in getting everything that they are hoping for, the Second Amendment will no longer exist. And as we've discussed many times before, it's the Second Amendment that is the cornerstone of the rest of the Constitution. If it falls, the entire Bill of Rights and the Constitution fall.
Yeah, you know, that's why they wrote it that way. Freedom of religion, you know, the government not telling you how to worship, freedom of speech, freedom of the press. And then right beneath that, they said, now we need an armed populace in case somebody tries to not live by those things. Once you practically make the Second Amendment ineffective, then the people that want to rule us have nothing to be afraid of. That's exactly what the founders understood. This is dangerous times. What do you hear from customers on that subject? Are people very worried about this?
People are very worried about it. They are preparing themselves in every way that they can afford. More ammo, more guns, more training.
Yeah, and that's important. And the ammo's been a problem, too. Is it still as short as it was a couple of months ago?
It is. Ammo, we are told, will still be in short supply for at least, best case scenario, another 9 to 12 months.
Well, and with what they're moving on, I think that they're just, again, Obama was the best gun salesman in American history, and Joe Biden, ought to be outdone, is going to end up being try to top that and be the best gun salesman in the country. The problem is, if they then pass laws and come try to take your guns, that's something we don't even really want to contemplate, but it is a serious issue. LSG Tactical Arms, the original Pratt on Texas Second Amendment anti-wimp headquarters. They're on 34th Street between Boston and University. In fact, you old Lubbockans know it's the old Gents House of Music building. Stop and see them. Y'all are still closed on Sunday and Monday, right?
That's it. Yes, sir.
All right. Good deal. Tell everybody there hello and good to visit with you, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Will do. Thank you, Robert.
In other news, a judge reveals the Centers for Disease Control eviction moratorium was unconstitutional as a federal judge in Texas. And he's right, John Barker. What the hell does CDC get off passing legislation like that? He pointed out that states are in charge of these kind of things. So it'll have to go, they'll have to peel this up to the Fifth Circuit if the Biden administration wants to stand behind it. It took place during the Trump administration. It's insane. Oh, the CDC, who the hell they are, just making law out of a bunch of doctors and bureaucrats. Marble-sized hail, quarter-sized hail fell on parts of North Texas last night about 8 o'clock. Got a big hailstorm. A Littlefield prisoner has been sentenced to 27 months in federal prison after pleading guilty to sending a bomb threat to a Texas courthouse. One Justin Allen Wetzel pleaded guilty. Apparently in last year, he mailed a letter from his cell in the prison in Littlefield to threaten the courthouse in Conroe down in Montgomery County. Good grief. He was already serving 15 years. And, my friends, a 5-alarm foam recycling plant fire in Tarrant County is just still burning. They had to bring in all their reserve firefighters and everybody else there to fight this from Richland Hills. Big fire. All right, my friends, that's it for now and for this week. Long live liberty, long live Texas, and may God bless us all. Adios, mis amigos.